Good afternoon. I'm Superintendent Thomas Licata of the Niagara Falls Police Department. Niagara Falls, like many cities in New York or even across the nation for that matter, has experienced a substantial increase in violence, homicide in particular. Year to date, we've had 14 homicides. 9 of those are a result of shootings. To put that in perspective, in the year 2019, we had 4 homicides, only 2 of which were a result of shootings. To the citizens of Niagara Falls, the people standing here with me, we know you're concerned. We pledge to do all we can to stop the violence. With me, I have to my immediate left, Mayor Robert Ristaino. To the mayor's left, we have U.S. Attorney J.P. Kennedy. To his left, we have Police Captain Roger Freeman of the Niagara Falls Police Department. And rounding this side is Deputy Superintendent of Police Niagara Falls, John Fossil. To my immediate right, I have Niagara County District Attorney Caroline Wotazik. To her right, we have Niagara County Sheriff Mike Felicetti. And rounding out this end, we have City of Lockport Police Chief Steve Abbott. We have called this conference today to address the situation and let you know the changes that are occurring. In order to explain where we are going, we must first go back a few months. Gun violence had been increasing as the summer progressed. As law enforcement officials in the city and the county, we were concerned that we could be experiencing the same thing that other municipalities had been experiencing, record-breaking homicides throughout New York State. In August, Sheriff Felicetti and I began to talk about the issue. Gun violence was our primary concern. He suggested that we talk to some of our colleagues, form a task force to address this problem. Sheriff Felicetti organized a few meetings, and the Niagara County Violent Crime Task Force was formed. With Niagara Falls being one of our major concerns, it was decided that Captain Roger Freeman would head up the operation and coordinate with our partners. This task force is comprised of local law enforcement on the local, county, and federal level. Although they are a countywide task force, there is a major component working here in Niagara Falls. The primary focus of the task force is to get illegal guns off the street before they're used in homicides. They've been working together for approximately 10 days. They have taken 8 guns off the street, have made 5 arrests, and also confiscated a substantial amount of suspected narcotics. The partnerships that we have formed by joining local, county, and federal law enforcement agencies allows us more resources and tools in this effort. We've included the Niagara County District Attorney's Office and the U.S. Attorney's Office in our effort to ensure that we are laying appropriate charges based on the circumstances that are in front of us. Outside of the task force and our members on it, I would be remiss if I did not mention the men and women of the Niagara Falls Police Patrol Division, Detective Bureau, and Crime Scene Unit. They have done outstanding work all summer long that has prevented more violence than we know of, and also when the violence has actually occurred, they have done outstanding work to help solve these crimes. The majority of our homicides are solved, and we expect to make more arrests in the near future. With that being said, it is incredibly important that we receive help from the citizens that we serve. If you know anything about any of these terrible incidents or any other crimes, please contact us. And there's a variety of ways you can do that. If you want to leave an anonymous tip, the number is 716-286-4591, which is on the top of the board there. If you would like to speak to someone in person that's not a police officer, we have police liaisons, Owen Steed and Ray Allen, working out of the Resource Center at 3001 9th Street. They are options for passing information to the police department. We have also received a lot of information through the Niagara Falls City website suggestion box that can be found at niagarafallsusa.org. Click on the action line and it'll give you an opportunity to leave a message. In addition to my comments, I know that the mayor, the district attorney, and the U.S. attorney would like to say a few words. At the completion of their comments, we will field a few questions. I now introduce Mayor Ristaino.
Thank you, Chief. Good afternoon, everyone. Obviously, as the police chief has indicated, this problem that the city of Niagara Falls is currently facing is a problem that is sort of sweeping not only across New York State, but across the country. I can tell you that this group, the men and women of the Niagara Falls Police Department, work very hard each and every day to do all that they can to keep all of us safe. And so several weeks ago, when the superintendent came to me to talk about the ideas that he and the sheriff were discussing, it seemed to me to be the appropriate approach to tackle a problem that we could see coming. Now, what would be great is if I could stand here and tell you that these fine men and women who are standing behind me have solved the problem and we can all go home and live happily ever after. But we all know that a problem such as this needs to have constant and repetitive attention. And so with the addition of this task force, that is what this problem will receive, continued and direct attention to the problem. Now, there isn't anything that this task force is going to be able to simply flip to change things. It's really going to require, as the police chief indicated, help from the community. The men and women that are in this task force, in fact, the folks who are standing here in front of you, with the exception of Chief Abbott, who I had the pleasure of meeting this afternoon, I know these folks and I know how hard they work. And so I can simply tell you that they're coming together in this task force to attack violent crime and the use of guns. You're getting the finest that Niagara County and Western New York can put together. I can assure you that I have great confidence in the fact that this group working together is going to make a difference. As the chief indicated, they have already operated and have been in operation and have already had some successes. But there's more work to be done. And I know that as I look around and I talk with some of the folks who are on the task force, I know that they have a singular focus. I know that they will be able to accomplish the task. And I also am confident that with the community's help, we're going to be able to tackle the problem. And once again, as we did during those times when demonstrations were happening, we're going to be able to show an opportunity again for Niagara Falls to do the best that it can in a difficult situation. So I appreciate you being here today, and I know that the residents of the community can be comforted by the notion that we have an excellent group of individuals, law enforcement people, multi-jurisdictional and departmental, working to keep us safe. And I'm confident, and I would tell the community that they can rest assured that these folks will be working tirelessly to help us all. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Caroline Witasik, the district attorney for Niagara County, and I can honestly tell you this year has been like no other. In my 23 years working here in Niagara County, never have I gotten up in the middle of the night so much to receive the phone calls of another life lost. When those calls come in, I shudder because I know it's another mother, another father, another grandparent, another sibling, another child that has to suffer that grave loss. And so every day we work with our partners to try to solve these crimes and also to use our Niagara County Intelligence and Crime Analyst Center to look at the non-fatal shootings to try to give us an idea of where we can focus to stop the next homicide from happening. It's tragic. It's really loss that does not have to happen, and so much of it is stemming from gun violence in this community. So I want to commend Sheriff Filicetti for the great idea to collaborate with all of our law enforcement partners across the county. And what I can tell you as I stand here, I have seen the borders of our cities and our towns dissipate to try to handle this problem. Because everyone that stands here got into their line of work to stop this from happening. And we were making so many strides last year and seeing our numbers continue to go down every single year, only for this year to stay, as we stand here today, to be as tragic as it is. So our office, not only do I have members on this task force from my office, but we stand ready every single day to make sure that we're sending the right message to the community, that we are prosecuting these cases fairly and effectively, that we are working from the minute one of these crimes take place on the ground with our law enforcement partners to make sure we have solid prosecutions. And we also work very closely with J.P. Kennedy and the U.S. Attorney's Office to determine which is the most effective prosecutor to handle each and every case. So I want to thank everyone up here, and I know Mr. Kennedy wants to speak, but I can tell you, when we sit down with the victims' families of these homicides, the devastation that these cases cause. Looking into the eyes of the parents of the child that was lost, a lot of who we've lost are young adults with no future now. And so we have to look to our community. We have to ask people to put the guns down, to realize whatever issues you have that is causing this violence. Really, when you look at it, a day, a week, a month later, was it really worth it to have the lives that we've lost, to take the futures away from those people that we've lost, to leave the devastation for the families, for the lives that we've lost? It's not worth it. Put the guns down, work out your issues as adults, as human beings. And I need people in this community to come forward and help law enforcement help stop this problem. Thank you.
This past Tuesday evening, 25-year-old Shakia Boyce of Niagara Falls was fatally shot as she was getting into a car at the intersection of 20th Street and Center Avenue here in the city. At the time she was shot, Ms. Boyce had just completed paying her respects for another murder victim, 24-year-old Clyde Coleman, who was shot on Highland Avenue earlier in the month. As the superintendent mentioned, Ms. Boyce was the 14th homicide this year. With only 4 homicides in each of the previous 2 years, homicides this year are already up over 300% here in Niagara Falls. Sadly, as we've heard, as the mayor said, and as the district attorney said, this explosion in violent crime is not limited to Niagara Falls. Just a few days ago, Governor Cuomo announced that shootings in New York City are up 100%. And in the city of Buffalo, shooting victims are up 96%. Today, the biggest danger to the lives of those living in our inner cities is violent crime. The leading cause of death for young black males in this country is homicide. Each year, approximately 7,500 black Americans are victims of homicide. Every one of those lives matter. Though perhaps surprising to some, this increase in 2020, and the district attorney mentioned this, represents only the second time in the last 30 years that we've seen a rise in the violent crime rate. Beginning in the early 1990s and continuing for more than 2 decades straight, violent crime plummeted in our country. In 2015 and in 2016, for the first time in over 2 decades, that trend reversed, and we saw violent crime increase nationwide, with murders spiking by 21%. Now, the best explanation that I've seen for that 2015-2016 increase in violent crime relates back to what happened in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014 with the shooting of Michael Brown. The so-called Ferguson effect, which resulted in this uptick in violent crime in 2015 and 2016, is really attributable to 2 distinct things. The first is depolicing. In light of the negative publicity and public protests over allegations of overly aggressive and discriminatory police practices, law enforcement, fearing further criticism and lawsuits, began to withdraw and retreat. They stopped engaging in proactive policing efforts. And when the police back away, criminals step forward. Secondly, these high-profile incidents such as what happened in Ferguson and the death of Freddie Gray in Baltimore, were interpreted by the public to mean that justice was not being administered fairly. That narrative, in turn, caused some individuals to engage in behaviors that directly challenged the legitimacy of law enforcement and caused others to choose not to turn to law enforcement when crimes occurred. In short, the increase we saw in violent crime in 2015 and 2016 largely stemmed from a broken relationship between the community and law enforcement. It was during that upward violent crime that I, in 2016, became the United States Attorney. My very first domestic priority as U.S. Attorney was, and remains, to drive down violent crime in our district. During my first 3 years on the job, those efforts worked. As the district attorney mentioned, the FBI statistics show how violent crime dropped in 2017, 2018, and 2019. But then 2020 hit. After 3 straight years of drops in violent crime, we are seeing for just the second time in the last 30 years an unprecedented increase in violent crime across our state and across our great nation. In fact, as if we needed something else to make this year any more memorable, preliminary figures suggest that 2020 will bring our nation's largest single-year increase in homicides ever. That is not acceptable. And as the saying goes, those who cannot learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And so, in 2020, we see the very same factors in play today that were in play during the 2015-2016 increase in violent crime. For in 2020, just like in 2015 and 2016, with a tsunami of civil unrest following incidents such as those of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and closer to home, Daniel Prude in Rochester, we are once again witnessing a breakdown of the relationship between law enforcement and the community. Layered over that, however, this time we have the added social and psychological trauma being wrought by the unprecedented response to the pandemic. As we combine a heightened sense of conflict, stress, and frustration with a diminished sense of control, options, and mobility, we've created a recipe for disastrous violence. Sprinkle in some various changes to New York State law in 2020, which, in the name of criminal justice reform, made it much more difficult for our county, state, and local law enforcement partners to keep criminals off the streets, and we find ourselves in the middle of a perfect storm. So how do we calm the waters and go about reversing this trending increase in violent crime? By using the same remedy that time and again has proven successful. The remedy that led to consistent decreases in crime from the early 1970s all the way through 2015, and the remedy that reduced crime between 2017 and 2019. And that remedy is repairing the broken relationship between law enforcement and the community. And the only way to fix that relationship is to have both our law enforcers and our community come to a shared understanding that our system of justice only functions when each group demonstrates that they are both accountable and empathetic to the other. Here, the first step toward the development of this mutual sense of accountability and empathy comes with law enforcement. As we are doing here today, reaching out to those people living in these poor, violence-riddled communities and letting them know that law enforcement and the entire community truly does care about your welfare and the welfare of your neighborhood. Your lives do matter. And to prove that your lives matter, we will not back down. We will hold accountable those in the community who fail to meet our societal standards as expressed in our nation's laws used to regulate behavior of all Americans. But as we undertake that task, remember this. Our purpose in focusing our policing efforts in your neighborhood is not because we are out to get you. It's because we are out to protect you. The first duty of government is to protect its people. Furthermore, those of us working in government generally and law enforcement in particular recognize that we too must be held accountable for our actions and that we must show empathy and respect toward those that we serve. It is indeed a two-way street. Through this shared demonstration of accountability and empathy, the relationship between law enforcement and the community will begin to heal. And once that happens, our violent crime rates will, as they have by and large since the early 1990s, begin once again to decrease. Thanks to the efforts of Niagara Falls Superintendent Thomas Licata, Niagara County Sheriff Michael Felicetti, Lockport Police Chief Steve Abbott, Mayor Restano, and my fellow prosecutor and friend, District Attorney Carolyn Wotasik, we have stood up this Niagara County Violent Crime Task Force, and I want to commend them for their initiative in leaning forward at a time when many police communities across the country are pulling back. By using this task force and by positioning our federal agents and our federal prosecutors, including Assistant United States Attorney Charles Watkins, who's here with me today, an extremely talented violent crime prosecutor in my office who has agreed to work and serve as our liaison on this task force, We will work with our local and county partners to rid our neighborhoods of those driving the violence. We will increase accountability, and we will increase empathy. By using all those tools and the resources that we bring to the table as a federal government, including the nearly $2.5 million in grant money that we provided to Niagara Falls in June to provide for additional police officers, including the addition of investigative resources from our Department of Justice law enforcement partners in the Drug Enforcement Administration, the ATF, and the United States Marshals Service, we will work collaboratively with our local and county partners to drive down violence which has been ravaging your neighborhoods. Through our collective efforts, the violent actors currently afflicting our community will end up where they belong, in long-term quarantine, in a prison far from Niagara County. Once there, having rid ourselves of this recent plague of violence and unrest, we will be well on our way, both as a community and as a nation, to healing and securing a future full of promise, good health, safety, and security. Thank you to all the public leaders standing behind me today for their leadership on this issue. And thank you to the community for your cooperation in this literally effort of life and death. Thank you.
Okay, with that being said, we will open it up to questions, and if they're specific to a particular person, they can come up and answer.
Superintendent, are you going to be seeing more active patrols by not only, you know, your department, but the Niagara County Sheriff? It's a collaborative effort.
Yeah,
are you going to be seeing more ATF agents on the street?
The task force itself is not a show of force, so to speak. A lot of the members of the task force are detectives, investigators. It's an intelligence-based effort to find these people that are violent, that have the guns, to work up small investigations and make arrests. So the primary focus of it isn't saturation. If that's the question you're asking, with marked units, no.
Can I just have one thing?
Sure.
And just to be clear, because it might have been somewhat confusing in my comments, this isn't one of those situations like Operation Legend, which is a national program where federal resources are being flooded into communities. We're just using on the existing resources that we already have, the partnerships that we already have, and leveraging those to address this problem.
You said there were 14 homicides. How many have been solved so far?
The majority of them have been solved. I really don't want to speak on the numbers because we have a couple that we're close to, and I really don't want the people that we're looking for to realize that where we are with these investigations.
What's the majority? More than half?
More than half. Yep. So you had a question over here?
Yeah, Chief, in regard to what Mr. Kennedy said, do you think your officers consciously or unconsciously are stepping back?
I could say that, every department has a variety of officers. I could say the majority of my officers are hardworking and doing a job that I am proud of every day. And, you know, even patrol officers are out there stopping cars and doing things that maybe some departments haven't been doing. I think partly because they know they have support from the department and from the mayor. In some of the departments where you're seeing that pullback, I don't know if the officers there feel that way.
I know I haven't spoken to you, but I've spoken to other chiefs and lieutenants. Are you aware of the Gun Back Buy program that the community is trying to put together? We're trying to raise $20,000?
We are aware.
So after we raise that $20,000, how fast will we be able to get out on the streets and collect the guns?
Well, as private citizens, you really can't do a buyback yourselves because you'd be buying illegal guns, which means you'd be violating the law. So we've been in touch with some of the people that are heading that up and looking for avenues to make sure that the money is put in a place that can be used to buy the guns, and we will assist in any way possible with the confiscation and destruction of those guns.
Okay, actually, I am in charge of that program. I have not spoken to anybody about that. I've reached out to officers, and I've asked them once we get the money.
People that you have working with you have called me. I mean, we could talk offline, but I've talked to two people in particular. Then I'm sure you're going to know who they are when I tell you who they are. But
I understand that we won't be going around collecting the guns. But before we get that $20,000, can we have a plan already in place That way, when we have the money, we can go ahead and execute it. Because right now, our city, this is like an emergency.
I don't disagree with you, but unfortunately, we have to do things through legal channels. If you were to come here and try to give me $20,000 and say, can we buy guns with it? That's not how it works. Anything you donate to the city would have to go into the general fund. You're looking at things that are bigger than us. That's why we are also looking at some other avenues to put people in contact with you to make it go faster. But unfortunately, I've talked to people representing you, but not you.
So is there going to be a gun buyback program, I guess?
Potentially, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I believe they're having a fundraiser for it tonight.
When you hear protesters, demonstrators saying, you know, defund the police, not just in Niagara Falls, but in general, anywhere, you've responded by stepping up, you know, with increased police presence. I mean, are you concerned of a response to that?
I'm not concerned because, as the U.S. Attorney said, I believe the majority of the people in these neighborhoods are looking for us to step up. The violence has to be addressed. You know, for us to pull back now while it's out of control just is against every grain of law enforcement. I mean, we all took this job and took an oath to protect the public, and we have 14 homicides. For us to sit back and say, well, we can't do anything because there's a segment of the population that might be offended, is not acceptable. You know, we're doing what's best for everybody.
Are these random? Are they targeted? And do residents of Niagara Falls, visitors of Niagara Falls, need to be worried about their safety when they're here in the city?
In my opinion, they're not random. And it's a particular set of circles of people that are continually involved in this kind of activity related to narcotics a lot of the times. So I personally would say no. If you're a visitor of Niagara Falls, you're probably safe and there's not an issue with that. But there are times when random things happen, when this rival group and this rival group just meets at a place that we can't predict and things happen. So, I mean, I can't guarantee you 100%, but I'm telling you that it's not like we have somebody out there that's just taking shots at people for no, you know, no legitimate reason that we can put on it.
May I?
Sure.
May I just to follow up on what the superintendent said, they have intelligence that indicates how and why these things are happening, and certainly the reason why we're here, the reason why that young lady is concerned and doing something in the community, is because all of us are working collectively to attack this problem. I would say to residents, and I would say to tourists, you have in the city of Niagara Falls not only a first-rate department that is doing all it can to keep all of us safe, but you now have another tool, what you've heard here today. The residents are rising up themselves. This lady is a classic example of it. They want to do their part in helping law enforcement. So my direct response would be that residents and tourists should not feel afraid to be in Niagara Falls any more than they would be afraid to feel afraid in Buffalo, feel afraid in Rochester, feel afraid in any other city across America. If I had the recipe to rid Niagara Falls of violence, I would have patented that recipe, handed it both to the U.S. Attorney and the District Attorney, and I would bid you all a farewell as I went to the South Pacific with all the money I make. So at the end of the day, the end of violence and the end of crime is really, I think, a conclusion that's not realistic. What we do have right now, as the U.S. Attorney indicated, as the District Attorney indicated, is a disturbing uptick in that kind of conduct. And what is uplifting to me as the mayor is that there are residents that are ready to say, you know what, you guys and gals are putting your shoulder to the wheel, we're going to come with you. Instead of having a community that wants to fight, they want to help. And so I really look at the city of Niagara Falls again as a blueprint that I would hope other communities can follow, because I do think that the community at large wants to help bring safety and peace.
Chief, I want to follow up on Tim's question about defund the police. Some who have used the phrase argue that what they mean by it is that we'll take some of the burdens off the police, such as mental health interventions, and have like social workers or other professionals do that part. In your opinion, is that a workable, realistic model to have them riding along with you?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I mean, I'm not saying that we should take money away from the police, and every municipality is different. America can speak more of this than I can. We're in a little financial bind right now, and the department can use every penny it can get. But we also are working with mental health, and as a matter of fact, we have some mental health people riding with our officers as we speak. So we have partnered up with them too, and if the deputy chief, and look, I see you're trying to step forward. I know you had a big part of that. If you want to come in and explain, you know, some of the things, especially from the union perspective too.
Very quickly, and this program we started just yesterday. We have our officers on the street are riding along with mental health workers. The idea for this and the request for this actually came from our police union. So it's the program is just starting. We're building on it. We're changing the parameters as we go, but so far it's been successful.
I just want to add though, that does not take money and resources, or shouldn't be considered as taking money and resources away from our police department. Because when you send a social worker in, a mental health professional, a drug counselor in, you do have to maintain the safety of that interaction, and you will need police to be there to make sure that everybody's safe. So taking it doesn't ultimately take the burden, so to speak, off our law enforcement. It just adds extra resources to those calls so that we can effectively all get out of those calls safely and get people who need the help to get that help.
You know, in late June, I had announced the Social Justice Commission. The very thing that the deputy chief and the police chief reflected on with regard to the mental health involvement was a recommendation born out of one of the committees of that Social Justice Commission. We are hoping that before the end of the year, to announce the findings from all of the committees, the hard work that they've done to address and repair, as the U.S. Attorney indicated, the relationships in the community. I'm proud of the fact that the work of the Law Enforcement Committee within that commission came up with some very effective methods that, even though we haven't yet presented them for the City Council to review and approve as part of legislation, they're putting them in operation. And so we're able to get some real-time feedback on how those recommendations are operating. I also want to let everyone know that the council chair, Chris Vocio, is here with us as well today, and I know that he recognizes the need for us to do all that we can to increase our law enforcement efforts and maintain those relationships within the community.
So is the majority of this violence, could you characterize it as gang violence then?
I don't know if you could characterize it as gang violence, and maybe I should let Captain Freeman speak more of where we're at with that, as opposed to, you know, giving you just my opinion.
What we're finding, not necessarily gang violence. You'll get sections of the community. It could be a neighborhood beef. It could be a high school beef. Sometimes it starts very, very young and just kind of matures over the years and gets a little bit worse and a little bit worse. What we've done was used our intel center to target our hotspot areas. And by targeting our hotspot areas, we know who's in those areas, where those shootings are coming from, what times, so we can use our resources to hit those areas harder. And that's through street level stuff, through long-term investigation stuff. So we're trying to do like a two-pronged approach. So some stuff's happening currently, other things will happen a little bit later, but that's part of our investigations.
So if you've already solved about half of these homicides, I mean, are you getting a lot of cooperation from people in the community? Unlike in some areas like Buffalo, they have a tough time getting information, getting people to cooperate. So are you seeing this as well?
They're hit or miss. I'd have to refer to Captain Train and Criminal as far as how much cooperation he gets with every investigation. We see a lot of scenes. It's not necessarily people who are showing up at scenes who are upset with the police presence. They're upset with the results of the incident. They're upset that there's another shooting. They're upset there's another stabbing. They're upset that there's a house that they feel very uncomfortable with in their neighborhood, and sometimes things take a little bit longer for us to, you know, get a little bit more action than they'd like to see originally.
And to follow up on that, we will take information on anything, anytime. There's never too much. Never too much. So if someone's out there that thinks, well, the police have solved this. If there's something else that they know that we could, I'm sorry, if there's something else that they know that they don't, that, you know, we'll take all the information, even if it's redundant and we already have it. Well, we would love to talk to more people from the community because they're out there and they know what's going on. They see things. And like I said, part of the reason I gave you the information I did on how to contact us without actually talking to us is because I know some people are a little bit nervous about talking to the police.
And do you have an update on the woman who was beaten in her home in early September?
I do not have an update on that at this moment.
Do you have any information to provide?
Nothing that I'm going to share about an open investigation, but thank you. Anything else?
Question for the mayor.
Sure.
Mayor, you're currently preparing a 2021 city budget. You have a substantial revenue gap. You just said that you wanted to have as much resources for the police as possible. Can the police avoid being part of any spending cuts you might have to propose to the council?
Well, it's certainly going to be my hope that the police department is not going to see any reductions in service and staff. My hope is that if we are able to, first of all, we had heard from the U.S. attorney about opportunities for increased staffing. But in addition to that, it's my hope that through some of the other measures that I'm attempting to move through the budget process, that we could secure a stable staff for what the superintendent and deputy superintendent have asked. So the direct answer to your question would be that no, I'm not anticipating that the 2021 budget would include cuts to staff in the police department. By the way, I thank you for asking me that question because the council chair is here and now he knows that I'm expecting something. Anything else? Thank you all so very much.
Yeah, thank you.